Well, hello there. That one was for you, Luke. Today we have a very funny guest. Really just a fun, interesting episode. We kind of get into comedy, of course, towards the end. But the first half is about him serving in the military and a lot to do with hunting. It was just really fun, interesting episode. But he plugs his social media at the end. He also has a podcast called the XFL OL, where he basically just talks about the XFL and kind of makes fun of it. And he also goes to the LA Wildcats, where he'll be hanging out, drinking beers if you're ever there on a Saturday or Sunday. And he hosts a really cool show at his house. It's a huge backyard show. And like paid regulars at the Comedy Store go, and it's called Kids in the Yard. It's once a month on Saturday night. Check out his Instagram for when the next show is in March. And without further ado, please welcome our guest today, Bear.
I went out last Sunday with my little Marianne. She said, please stay till Monday, and she grabbed me by the can. She laid a big one on me, surprised me with her tongue. But her surprise was waiting there between my cheek and gum. Copenhagen, what a water flavor. Copenhagen, you can see it in my smile. Copenhagen, do yourself a favor, chew. Copenhagen, drive them pretty girls wild.
Wait, so you were in the Army, huh?
Yeah, I was just a reservist, though. I never deployed or nothing. Oh, okay.
I mean, was that a choice you made because you wanted to do it, or just because, I mean, you're from Arkansas.
Yeah.
Was it just a very common thing that everyone did?
Well, for me, my grandfather was a 12 Bravo, a combat engineer in Vietnam, and my dad was a combat engineer in Desert Storm. And so, like, and I know I never deployed, but, like, every time I was in the room with them, I felt like I didn't really belong. Mm-hmm. And so it was one of those things I felt like I had to do.
Yeah,
and
makes sense.
So I did it and volunteered for a couple of deployments, never got picked, so...
What was your MOS?
12 Bravo.
Oh, cool.
Yeah,
nice.
I was double qualified. I started as a 12 November, which is a horizontal construction engineer, but my unit was 806 in Conway, Arkansas, and they're a route clearance unit. So they just clear IEDs. That's what they're trained to do.
Cool.
And they're all 12 Bravo, so I reclassed.
Let's pretend I don't know what a 12 Bravo is.
So, yeah.
You know,
so
for the people at home who aren't sure.
So MOS is a military occupational specialty, which is basically a fancy way of saying... your job.
Yeah.
And then they have different, like, you know, a number generally with a letter. So Bravo is just B.
Right.
So they use the, what's it called? The phonetic alphabet?
The phonetic alphabet. Yeah. And the 12 series, that's all the engineers. So combat engineer is somebody that either clears the way or makes it impossible for the enemy to move. So, like, mobility and counter mobility. So we would, like, clear... minefields, like my unit was route clearance, so we trained IEDs, stuff like that. I know at Camp Robinson once we had a training mission where on the artillery range, the observation point, there was a bunch of trees that had grown up in the way. And instead of sending like loggers down in there, because there's live ordnance down there, they can't just send anybody down there. They sent our unit in. We trained looking for IEDs, which was at the time was just unexploded ordnance. Mm-hmm. Wrapped all the trees in deck cord and blew them up out of the way. It was
how fun
pretty
was
bad.
That?
It was badass.
Did you fire off any? Are they called lairs or?
You talking about Miklicks?
Miklicks.
Yeah. No, I never did, but I know there's some guys in my unit that were trained on it, but I never messed with
Miklicks
it.
Miklicks are super fucking cool. Basically, they get, think of like a big rope, only it's way larger than a rope, and it's all like dead cord.
Yeah.
And they just launch it out of a fucking tank, and it goes like...
Imagine like a, almost like either a crossbow or like a Lord of the Rings style catapult that shoots a bolt, but it's got a rope attached to it out across a minefield in front of you, and then when it hits the ground, it's all... ordnance, so it all explodes.
It looks fucking sick.
It's badass.
That sounds.
That's gotta like be. I mean, I was so Cameron was saying before. I did Corps of Cadets.
Yeah.
So for the longest time, I wanted to join the military because I was in the middle. I was in middle school, and one of the security guards was a Vietnam vet, just a bad motherfucker, just like super cool. And I just from sixth grade, I wanted to join the military, so I went to Corps of Cadets. I wanted to join the Marine Corps. If I would have joined, I would have liked to do. Infantry or artillery.
Yeah.
I think artillery is just so fucking badass.
It's pretty cool. You can't hear shit, but
You're fucking deaf and your back is killing you.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think with artillery, it's one of those jobs that it's so vital for field troops or whatever.
Yeah.
It's just so fucking badass.
Dude, fucking funny story. I was doing a training mission at Fort Hood in Texas, and for our AT, which is the annual training. They put us in Fort Hood. It's kind of like a desert. Not really. It's like West Texas style, like low shrubbery and things like that. We were out in the field, and we were where they put us. We were in between the artillery range and the artillery range's target.
Oh God!
So over like the first couple of days we were there, there were shells going over us and stuff. We were like, "What the fuck?" And like, cause, you know, one of those falls short,
yeah,
and
but
you know,
one misfire away from.
Yeah. Well, if you know anything about legs. Fort Hood, it's like the place where everybody goes to die. It's where all the shootings happen. It's where like I think a couple of years ago, no, it might have been 2016. There were some people that drowned in a flood. They were in like a back of a some type of truck, and they were doing a water crossing and ended up drowning. Like Fort Hood, like I wanted a t-shirt.
And great, you work there.
Yeah, it's like I want a t-shirt that says I survived Fort Hood.
Yeah, you should. I didn't deploy, but I survived Fort Hood. Yeah.
They got one of those like those counters, like how many days since an incident. It's just always at like 2.
It's always at like 2, yeah. It's like some guy trying to quit masturbating. He's like, I'm a weekend, guys, you don't understand. Then a week later, you're like back to day 3. Yeah. God damn it. Yeah, it was fun. Fort Hood was the only place that I ever, there. We had a gun range that got shut down because cattle came on, and because all the ranchers out there have deals with the government where they like
just
range their cattle, yeah, and so all their cattle came onto the gun range, and we had to wait, sitting there waiting on cows to get off so we can finish.
Oh yeah,
the 240s
because
they
throw a fucking fit.
Oh yeah, you shoot their cows. Yeah, you're. Yeah,
it's a lot of money.
Yeah, it
hundreds
is.
Of dollars.
Yeah, oh,
thousands.
Well, yeah,
yeah, yeah. My buddy worked on. Shout out to Coach. Listen, my buddy worked at. I think it was Henniker Farms. I think it was dairy and meat. He's gonna fucking butcher me for saying this, but yeah, it's so cool when it's a actual like humane farm and they do things properly. And yeah, you're still killing a cow, but it's just way nicer of a process.
Yeah.
And he says just like the meat and the milk is just fucking. He's the kind of kid who has like a glass of milk every fucking dinner. You know.
I grew up on my grandparents' cattle ranch, or they turned it into a horse ranch. So we started with beef cattle. Then we got into registered cattle, Santa Gertrudis cows. And my grandpa was showing some of them. And then he got into cutting horses. So we sold all the cows, got horses, and then raced horses.
From cutting there. Horses?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
A cutting horse, it's, do you know what, what's the thing? Fuck, the horse event where reining, you know what reining is?
No.
Okay. Cutting all it
I'm
is.
I'm a city slicker.
Yeah. We grew up in New Jersey.
Okay. Well, there's country folk in New Jersey, but anyway.
There are, South Jersey, with the Philly trash.
Trash people.
Okay. Well, you go into an arena, and there's like a herd of cows, right? Mm-hmm. And then you take your horse, and you ride it into the herd of cows, and there's numbers stamped on their tails, and like the dude will call out, the announcer will call out a number, and you have to cut and separate that cow from the herd, and you don't do any of the controlling. You drop the reins, and the horse does it all. And it's people that are really good, they have long
chats. The horses know numbers?
Well, because you have the one cow singled out, and all the horses know is you keep that cow away from the herd. And so while the cow is juking and trying to get back, the horse is juking it, matching it, and won't let it get back to the herd. And it's it derives from like back when all you had was horses to work cows, and you like say you had a cow that was sick or a cow you needed a doctor or something like that, and you had to separate it from the herd. Mm-hmm. That's where it comes from.
Okay, got
but,
it.
Yeah, most of the time the horses, if you're doing it right, the horse is doing all the work. But what people do to kind of cheat is they'll wear really long chaps, and then their feet, they'll be pressuring the horse with their feet and steering it one direction.
If you get caught, is everyone like, do you get disqualified, or that's just a hazard of the trade?
Dude, it's been so long since I've been involved with it, I don't really remember, because like I said, it was when I was a kid growing up, and my grandpa mostly did it, and I'll just go with him. But yeah, it was really fun. And our horses now, it's real funny. My stud horse back home, if cows get into the pasture with him, he'll go out there and start cutting them.
Oh, really?
Nobody on his back. He'll just go work them.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's so crazy. I guess, are they sheepdogs? Or what are the dogs that people have on farms?
Collies.
Collies.
Yeah.
Yeah, those.
It's badass. Dude, we had some border collies that were sick. Because you can train them with whistles. You can train them with commands. And they'll do basically, hey, go get those two. Hey, bring them here. Hey, stop them. Hey, and have you ever watched a video of it?
Yeah.
Oh, it's fascinating.
It's sick.
It's so cool how certain animals are just so incredibly instinctual.
Yeah.
It's just in their DNA.
Yeah. That's one of my favorite things about growing up in Arkansas was that my dad's grandpa was a world champion coon hunter. And so he taught my dad how to raise coon dogs and stuff.
World championships for that.
Yeah, they do. And it's a lot of fun. But my dad taught me. And so I grew up raising coon dogs. And like seeing a dog do what it was bred to do.
Where the Red Fern Grows, one of my favorite books growing up.
Yeah, Red Bones. Yeah. But seeing a dog do what it was bred to do, like it's awesome. It's a really big sense of pride you get when you train the dog to do it. And then it just comes out in them.
Well, sorry.
You're good. I train coon dogs, and then I train back in like 2015, I trained my first duck dog because I love duck hunting.
Oh, sick.
And like, I actually just recently had to sell my duck dog, which was heartbreaking. But
did you have it out here or was it?
No, it was back home. And when I moved out here, I left it with my dad. And then, you know, my dad, he's an old disabled vet, so he can't keep taking care of it. So I had to sell Chief. But I sold him to a duck hunter out in East Arkansas. So I'm sure he's having a good life.
Duck hunting seems like a ton of fun.
Dude, it's a blast. It's a lot of work. But it's not like other hunting where, like on a deer stand, you got to be silent and still. Duck hunting, you're sitting there bullshitting with your friends. You're grilling sausage. You're, like, hanging out. And then when the birds come, everybody gets real quiet and ducks down. And then shoot them, send the dog after them. Like, the dog does most of the work there if you got a good dog.
Yeah.
And it's just, like, where I'm from, to be a successful duck hunter, you either have to know the public land and really work to scout the public land or be a rich kid and know somebody with private land that you can just go set up in a duck blind they've already built for you.
Yeah.
And I didn't know any rich kids.
You were working the public land, huh?
Yeah, that's so awesome. Me and my buddies, we'd spend weeks. Like, we'd take bow season and be scouting. While we're out there bow hunting for deer, we'd be scouting for duck season. That way we would know where the water was and stuff. And Arkansas is weird because depending on when the rain comes, like, it'll and where the water is, that'll depend on where the birds are. But when they start moving through, like, if you're out there watching every day, when it comes time for hunting season, you know exactly what they've been doing. You've been tracking their movements, and you can get on top of them and get some birds.
Well, yeah, you made a point about how there's a lot of pride in training a dog to do what they're supposed to do.
Yeah.
Dude, I can't even imagine having an animal and letting it do what it's supposed to do. It's there's something so cool about seeing someone or something do something that they were made to do.
Yeah.
And I think selfishly as people, we have taken dogs and made them our possessions and not really thought about what they're supposed to do. Yeah, we have the man-made dogs like the pugs and the English bulldogs, but yeah, you get a Labrador, like a retriever, and they're great dogs, but it's almost selfish because we're not allowing them to do something that is so instinctual.
Dude, one of my biggest pet peeves, and I've gotten way better because I don't call people out on anymore because it's none of my business, but seeing people and the way they treat their dogs and the way they, like, they'll have their dog and they're treating their dog like a human. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, the dog psychology is way different than a human psychology. And like, dogs want a pack leader. Dogs want an alpha. They have a structure. And seeing somebody that is like, where they're loving up on the dog and treating it like a baby and treating it like a member of their family, the dog thinks it's in control. And then that's why, like, you'll see him walking down the street, pulling on the leash and like yanking them around. Other dogs will come, they'll start barking and trying to fight. They'll growl at strangers and shit. And anytime I see that, I don't ever get mad at the dog. I'll get mad at the person. I'm like, you have no idea how to be with your dog. You have no idea how to like properly socialize your dog and treat it. And it really frustrates
me. There's this dog trainer, I forget his name, but he's just so incredible. And he says, like, the reason why your dog is listening to me and not you is not because he likes me better, is because he respects me.
Yeah.
It's not a matter of like and love. He loves you. He likes
you.
Just
that you're not a man.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not the leader.
Yeah, they're not. It's a ladder of respect and structure.
Yep.
In the structure of you and the dog, you guys, he views you as a peer, mm-hmm. which is a problem because he's an animal and you should be able to control it.
Right.
You know?
And, like, especially growing up with hunting dogs, like, there was a lot of times where, like, we'd have coon dogs get in a fight underneath a tree on a coon. Like, you know, dogs are sitting there barking up at the tree and one will jump on the other and not even be thinking about it. But the other dog's like, hey, motherfucker, you jumped on me. And they'll start fighting.
Yeah.
And then you got to go in there and break it up. And if they don't respect you as the alpha, you're going to get chewed up right along the middle of them. Because coon dogs fighting, that's a hell of a fight. Yeah. Michael Vick don't know shit about a dog fight. I'll tell you that right now. Scary as shit. My dad, he actually got bit. It was real funny because he got into it with my duck dog over food.
Sounds hilarious.
Yeah, well, they got into it, and I'm running out there to break him up, and my dad, he just grabs my coon dog by, like, the back haunches, and the dog turns around and latches onto his hand, realizes it's my dad, lets go immediately, and then the fight's over, and the dog's, like, cowering because,
he knows he did something wrong.
Yeah, but it was funny to me because I was like, damn, dumbass, like, why'd you grab him? My dad just reached in there and grabbed him real quick and got his hand bit, and I thought it was really funny.
Yeah, but you know, but your dad did know. It's like, I know that this dog is gonna fucking stop, and he did, even after he bit him.
Yeah, you know? Well, I mean, he didn't even really get a hold of him. He, as soon as he saw that it was a person's hand, because he's in the middle of a fight, he just felt something grab him, and he turned around real quick. But as soon as he saw it was my dad, he let him go.
Again, going back to instincts.
Right.
With anybody, you're in a fight, someone grabs you.
Yeah, you ever been in a bar fight? You know, people just start swinging. You can't just go in there trying to break shit up. Yeah. Like, you might get the shit knocked out of you.
So do you hunt at all?
I do when I go home, and like I said, I just had to get rid of my duck dog, so That really sucks, but...
He's got duck dogs and coon dogs, but he doesn't hunt.
Had, asshole. Thanks for rubbing it in.
Yeah. My favorite type of hunting now, if I can't duck hunt, is bow hunting. Like, I love deer hunting with my bow, and that's a lot of fun. And I want to elk hunt really bad. I've been on a couple unsuccessful elk hunts in Arkansas, but I want to go on a successful elk hunt.
There's elk in Arkansas? Well.
Yeah. There's two herds. There's a north and a south herd up on the Buffalo River. And actually, they... what is it, CWD, chronic wasting disease, that affects deer species. It's bad in whitetails. I know it's bad in Oklahoma and stuff. Actually infected the elk herd, and the Game and Fish had to come and kill some of them a couple of years back, and it was real sad because I don't remember which herd. It was either the north herd or the south herd, but they came in and took out one of the whole herds.
Well, you know, people don't.
But the thing is that if they didn't do that, it would spread to all of them, and then there would be no elk.
Yeah. So. Yeah, people don't understand that sometimes human intervention is good for a species, because if we didn't, not we, but if people did an elk hunt or deer hunt, then it actually would hurt the population, because then older, like, deers that have, they can't produce any more, like, kids, would just, they kill the up-and-coming deer.
Yeah. Yeah.
And same actually, thing with that giraffe that everyone got mad at in Africa.
That's a
guy
big,
killed
he
that
killed,
giraffe.
Like, three giraffes.
Yeah, he killed, like, three giraffes who could actually mate, and this giraffe was way past mating age.
So it hurts
age.
The species.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's what a lot of people that get mad, and especially like out here, PETA people and stuff, but they get mad and they don't realize that conservation through hunting is actually, like,
really
it works.
Yeah.
And, like, if you monitor the species and you make sure that you're, whatever piece of land you're on, you're at the carrying capacity, and you watch that carefully. I mean, that's how we've, that's one thing about wolves in Yellowstone and places like that.
I used to do a bit about that.
Dude, like, people get so mad, but it's funny to me because... The people that get mad have no experience with wolves and no experience with the outdoors at all. They're just like, oh, it's a beautiful animal, whatever. But they, like, if they had grown up in the 1700s back when there was just muskets, and they're like, oh, you know, every week a wolf walks off with one of
your
babies.
Yeah.
Like, you might feel a little bit different about wolves.
Well, everyone's like, oh my God, they're killing hogs inhumanely. Well, if you were a farmer and the hog was costing you thousands and thousands of dollars a year because they eat your
500 pounds of dead. Every pig that walks on my land dies.
You might hire a helicopter to just go up there and mow them down too.
Yep.
Yeah. Because it's killing your fucking livestock.
Dude, we get down with the podcast. I'll show you on my Instagram. There's a, I was coon hunting with my dad, and this pig tried to get after my dog, and ended up, my dad shot it. And when the dog had it bait up, I went in and stabbed it with my knife and killed it. But we put it across the grill of my dad's truck, went all the way across the truck. That's how big this hog was. Jesus. Yeah.
My buddy.
And they're like, the wild ones are fucking vicious too,
dude,
right?
Huge tusks. Oh
yeah.
My God.
And the thing about the pigs down there is a lot of them have interbred with pigs that were domesticated. But they get feral immediately. So you'll see, like, you'll see razorbacks where they're black and hairy and they got the big tusks. But you'll see, like, I don't know if you know what a New Hampshire pig is. It's like a show pig. You'll see pigs out there that are colored like that, you know, pink with blue dots on them and stuff. You'll see spotted pigs. You'll see, because they've been breeding with people's pigs that end up getting out.
Yeah, they don't give a fuck.
It's a pig.
Them.
Like, they'll just fucking eat. That's all they want to do.
Yeah, amen.
Me too. I'm a pig too.
Dude. So one of the, it was really funny. I was muzzleloading hunting in high school with my buddies, and we went muzzleloading hunting. It's a muzzleloader.
Oh, God, okay.
It's a musket, basically. Yeah. It's a type of season, so instead of using a rifle or a modern gun, you use a muzzleloader, so you got one shot. And it was real funny. It's the type of, I think, like flintlock, where you cock the hammer back, put a primer on it, you know, load the shell
like
in.
When you see, like, a Revolutionary War reenactment.
Basically. I mean, the ones we have now are slightly more technologically advanced, but not much. So we were all muzzle loading, and we were sitting on this huge tree, right? And there's four of us, so we're sitting on each corner of the tree. It's like north, south, east, west. And we're out there. It's dark. We're waiting on the sun to come up because we're waiting for deer. We're waiting to see a deer. And we hear this. Like, I don't know if you know this, but the Jurassic Park Tyrannosaurus Rex, that's a pig's noise. The noise it makes, that's they distort it and stuff, it was a pig is how they got that noise.
A distressed pig, like a hurt pig?
Or
is it a mating call?
Or an excited pig?
I don't know. I wasn't there. Like, I don't know what they were doing to the pig, but I know it was a pig noise.
I don't know if they were tickling it.
So we're out there in the middle of the woods, and all of a sudden I hear a Tyrannosaurus Rex coming. I think I'm like, 14, 15 at the time? And it was real fun because we were all talking about, like, how brave. You know how guys are. We're all on the football team together.
I'll fuck some pigs up.
Fuck yeah. Go out here with these muzzleloaders, kill a deer. Like, this ain't nothing.
Kill a fucking bear if it comes. Yeah.
We were on Ryan's deer lease, and he was, like, telling us about the pigs out there. I was like, we ain't scared. Ain't nobody scared, you know? Then we hear this pig squeal, and it was like a big boar had a deep growly squeal to it. And then down there in the swamps, like the trees, some of them, like the roots are barely, they're dead and they're barely hanging in the ground. So all of a sudden we see a couple trees fall. Like, oh, like you just hear the crash, and like it's, the sun hasn't come up yet. You can barely see through the woods, and you see the tops of like some small trees falling and hear it crash, and you hear the, hear a Tyrannosaurus Rex. Then it gets real quiet, and all you hear is click, 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 click. All four of us pulled back the hammers on the muzzleloaders because we all got one shot. So we're all freaking out. It was real. We never even saw the pigs. We just heard them. They were like a few hundred yards away from us, but it was enough to, you know, got a little scared. Because pigs, if they come up on it, they'll eat you.
Oh, fuck yeah.
Yeah, pigs are mean as shit.
Gory and shit, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I heard, I was watching this one hunting show.
Robert Baratheon killed by a pig, you know?
I didn't know
Who the fuck is that?
Game of Thrones.
Oh. Jesus Christ. I was watching this hunting show, and they said, for some reason, the more small the animal, the like the more noise it makes, and the bigger, the less noise. Like, you'll think someone is a fucking, like, just gigantic bear, and it'll be, like, a little pig or a fucking squirrel.
Yeah.
And then, all of a sudden, it'll be silent, and you'll walk up on a bear.
It's
how is this gigantic thing not making any noise?
Yeah.
Because really, they need to be quiet.
And that's the majority of what, why bear attacks happens, because they get startled. Like, I was walking through Yosemite. We did, like, 4 days, 3 nights hiking in the high wilderness. Mm-hmm. It was awesome.
Dude, I bet that was fun as shit.
Dude, it was, I have some videos on my Instagram I'll show you afterwards.
Hell yeah.
In 4 days, I saw maybe 10 people, and it was just a passing, like, hey, how are we? Good to see you. All right. It was just so nice. But we did like 20,000 feet of elevation change, and we were 10 miles inland from the road, and there'd be points where I'd be walking, and you would see kind of like a cutout of like a very like picture perfect, oh, this is where a bear is going to live, and you'd be like, you know, head on a swivel. Nothing. So after 4 days, on the last day, we're hiking out, and we see all kinds of wildlife. I see deer. I see fucking chickens.
Saw chickens?
Dude, it was so random. Like, what the fuck are these guys doing here?
Dude, so, I didn't know there was free roaming chickens in Yellowstone. That's kind of badass.
Dude, it was so cool. We're like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
So we're finally, after 4 days of thinking like, okay, that's where a bear would be, and being, you know, let down, we were a mile away from the road. All of a sudden, we hear a couple leaves ruffle. We look to the left. It's a mom and a cub, which is the worst thing you want to see.
Yeah, that's what. Yeah, that'll make you shit your pants.
Me and my buddy are blowing our fucking
little. And they're
eating
potato chips. I can't believe it.
and we're blowing our fucking whistle like. Yeah. And my buddy's like, "Don't turn it. Like, don't show it your back." And I'm like, "All right, well, I need to get the fuck out of here.
No
so
shit.
Let's blow a whistle and then fucking run." I took my bucket knife out, and it was so crazy.
It was
so startling.
Me and my buddy Garrison back in Arkansas, we have we ran into a couple black bear, and every time we run into them, they just run away from us because the black bear are real skittish. But it was real funny because we were bow hunting one time, and we had saw a black bear on the way in, and then we split up. My buddy's like, "I'm going to go down this ridge. You go off in this draw." So I went up, and I had my climbing stand with me. So I go up the climbing stand. I put my ghillie suit. It's a leaf suit, but it looks like a ghillie suit. And I'm up there with my bow waiting on deer. Don't see nothing. And finally, like, it's getting right at dark, and I see this figure, like, look out behind a tree and then go back behind the tree. And then the next time I see it, it's behind a tree closer to me. Peek out, and it's just a dark figure. I can't make out what it is. You know, I've got my bow ready and stuff, but, you know, an ethical That's hunter. I'm not about to draw on something that I can't tell what it is. Yeah. Well, what it was my buddy Garrison saw me in the leaf suit in the tree, and all he saw was something dark in the tree and thought it was a bear. And so he was creeping up on me thinking I was a bear, and I thought he was because we had seen one on the way in. And then finally we get like 60 yards from each other, and I'm up there, and I'm like, "Garrison." And he's like, "Holy shit, this bear just said my name." And then
dude, that could have been fucking bad.
Well, we knew we had split up. That's the thing, is we knew we had split up. We didn't know exactly where the other one was, and we hunt together all the time.
But you know there's a person out there.
Right, and so we know very well, like, not only do you have to know what you're shooting at, you have to know what's behind what you're shooting at, because when I let this arrow go, it's going to go right through that deer or whatever, like butter, and it's going to keep going.
Oh, yeah.
And so you've got to know what's behind it. And
how far, like, through a deer will an arrow go?
Far. Like, especially if you don't hit bones, if you get, like, just a straight lung shot and you miss the ribs, it's like a bullet, basically. Just goes straight through it, come out the other side.
50 feet?
Oh, further, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, arrow, you think, coming out of a compound bow, it's moving at 325 feet per second. So it can go pretty far.
And it's metal tip. It's fucking, like,
wicked sharp. Which, if you're up in a tree stand, obviously you're shooting down at the ground.
Yeah.
But, again, when my buddy's in the woods with me, I'm not about to just start shooting at figures until I know exactly what it is.
My closest story to that one time was I was on this boat down in LBI, Long Beach Island, and we're fishing for fluke, and the guys in the boat just thought I was the biggest fucking dipshit. Because I just watched Monster Fish.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
when was this?
This is years ago. I just watched Monster Fish. I'm getting all geared up for this fucking fishing trip. Yeah, we're just hunting fluke, but I want to be the best fucking fluke fisher I can be, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I lay the bait in. All of a sudden, I get a big one. I mean, the fucking, the fishing rod is bending.
Yeah.
I'm twisting in. I'm putting my gut like the guy in the show, and I'm twisting it. And now everyone on the boat's like 20 people are gathering around me because like, what the fuck did this guy catch? And I'm like, holy shit, I got a fucking shark. I got a fucking shark. Everyone's like, reeling. And I'm fucking reeling. And all of a sudden, the fucking guy works in the boat, eating a Hot Pocket, nonchalantly walks over and goes, you hooked the bottom of the boat, jerk off. And everyone, the air just lets out of the boat. Like, oh.
Yeah.
And then about 45 minutes later, I hook it, and this time I'm like making sure it's not the bottom of the boat. And I go, no, I'm getting some, like, it's not just a pull. He's tugging me a little bit, and I'm tugging it. And I'm like, I got another one. I got another one. And the guy behind me on the other side of the boat goes, I got one too. And I go, holy shit.
You hooked each other's lines.
And the same guy comes over in another Hot Pocket goes, you hooked each other's lines. Jesus Christ. At this point, I'm just like, you know what? I'm going to go inside, have a fucking cup of hot chocolate, and just call it a day.
That's funny. We back in high school, we would go bass fishing a lot. And you see a guy like, especially on the river where we used to, because we used to smallmouth fish a lot. And you see guys like they'd hook a limb or something. And especially because a limb underwater, it'll have some give to it because that wood
sway,
is, yeah. And so they'll pull and they'll be like, oh shit, I got one. And they're sitting there fighting a tree the whole fucking time. Yeah. Don't even know it. Fishing was a lot of fun. My stepdad, he really got me into smallmouth fishing. We used to go up to Saline River, and his dad had a place on it, so we would park at his place and then wade up the river. And you could go for 2-3 miles just wading, and every time you get to another pool, just start fishing. And those fish are smart. It's weird because, like, you've got to creep up on – you can't let your shadow hit the water. You can't because so many people go through there and fish,
yeah.
And because there's such big fish in there that, like, they'll know that there's somebody up there fishing, and they won't bite. And so you gotta slip up on them. But if you can, man, you can pull a 6-7 pound smallmouth, which is big for a smallmouth.
Now, why do you prefer smallmouth as opposed to big mouth?
I don't know. It was bonding with my stepdad for one, and for me, it's harder to catch smallmouth. And
are they tastier?
Not particularly. Okay. I mean, bass tastes like bass to me.
Okay.
But yeah, it's just that they're harder to catch. And there's less of them. Like, they live in real cold water, so you got to be in, like, a cold river, or they're going to be at the bottom of a lake somewhere. And not every waterway in Arkansas has them, but Saline River, real close to where my mom lives, they do. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of fun going up there catching them.
Now, you mentioned you, like, really like bow hunting.
Yeah.
I've heard a lot of people say they love bow hunting, and they love to hunt in general.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people prefer bow to gun. What is it?
Okay, so I started off hunting with a rifle, and the first deer I killed was with a rifle. But once I got into bow hunting and I got my first bow, I practiced, because it's hard. Like, being consistently accurate with a bow is hard. Now, imagine you just I had a hair in my mouth, but imagine you just spent, like, all your fall preparing for one shot, and then you put all the work into it. You finally get a deer underneath you. Like, your nerves are going to be shaking. You're going to be shaking, and all of a sudden that really hard shot becomes near impossible. But once you get a deer on the ground with a bow, it's so rewarding and so satisfying because you're like, I worked for it. Yeah, you work for it. Not only that, but you have a like a connection to your past, it feels like. It's because you know that people have been bow hunting for thousands of years. And you think, you know what? No, if I did live thousands of years, I'd have been just fine.
Yeah.
You know, I can, and it gives you a sense of pride. And it's so much harder that after you do it, you see a deer out there at 100 yards with a rifle. Yes, I still use a rifle when I need meat, when I'm just trying to fill the freezer. But it's just not the same because, I mean, killing a big buck is fun. But getting a buck with your bow when it has to be within 30 yards of you. Or, I mean, if you're really...
Yeah, and they're skittish.
They don't want to be 30 yards from you. They want to get away. They want to live just as much as you want to eat.
Being downwind, you know.
Yeah, you got to pay attention to the wind. You got to pay attention to everything. And you got to pay attention to your movements. And...
Or upwind, right?
Yeah. You want to be upwind
of the
deer. But, and you could go out there, put all your time and work in, go out someplace, the wind change on you, all of a sudden you got to make a different plan.
Yeah.
And
also, being upwind, I have to imagine, makes it a more difficult shot, right? When it's blowing back at you?
No.
Or
really.
You're going so fast, doesn't matter.
Yeah. I mean, you're thinking winds like out here. There's not winds like out here in Arkansas.
Oh, yeah.
Like, windy out there is like 15 mile an hour, unless there's a tornado coming through. But it's just, you want to be to where the smell.
Yeah, because it's not wafting.
They live by their nose. Down, yeah. And yeah. So their nose and their ears, basically. So you want to make sure that you're where they
do you have, like, out here, do you still have, like, meat that you bagged back in Arkansas?
So what
I just a grocery store guy out here?
Mostly grocery store. What I did was, like, this past year, I went and I killed a couple deer for my grandpa and filled his freezer. And this coming hunting season, I'll be getting a deep freeze out here. I'll go home, hunt, and send it out here and fill my freezer. That way I'll have meat for the rest of the summer.
Do you break down the deer yourself or do you bring it to a butcher?
Both. I do it mostly myself, especially when I was on my own. But the last one I killed, my grandpa was like, dude, just take it to a butcher. I'll pay for it. And so it's less work.
Yeah.
So,
dude, I got a video I'll send you. It's this guy who has his own technique of breaking down a deer. Mm-hmm. He does it like 60% faster, and there's virtually zero mess because of the way he cleans it and butchers it.
Mm-hmm.
There's literally zero blood. All you need is a sharp knife, a hacksaw, or sawzall rather, mm-hmm. and a garbage can. And it's simple fucking thing. So if you ever want to do it like this video, it's simple too.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah. Somebody that's good, knows how to skin a deer, can do it in 10 minutes if they really know what they're doing. But to like actually cut and process the meat, that takes longer just because, I mean, you got to go there and get each individual cut of steak out or grind it up into a hamburger or whatever you want to do. Mm. But it's not difficult. Once you've done it and you know how to do it, it's not hard. Like you said, you need a saw and a knife. That's all you need. And you really don't need a saw. It just makes cutting through the bone easier.
Yeah, I want to be able to do this so badly. Like, just so fucking bad.
Dude, you want to go hunting with me?
Fuck
yeah. I was going to ask, too, if we can come.
Absolutely. We can set up some... I know we can set up some shows in Arkansas and go hunt in Arkansas.
Really?
Oh, my God. Dude, that is... first of all, like, one of my, like... New Year's resolutions was to do a road gig. So this is not going to end 2-1 right here.
Well, we can definitely set that up, but we can also, because I haven't got a California hunting license yet, and there's desert mule deer out here, and I want to kill a muley with my bow. So I may be bringing my bow out here next fall and seeing if I can get one out here, and y'all can go with me then too. Okay.
I'm going to start going to a shooting range, though. I haven't shot a gun in well over 10 years.
Well, guns are pretty expensive, though, right?
I mean, depending on what
you
get. You
can go to a range and they have guns that you can shoot, though, right?
Yeah, they're not going to let you check it out and take it
out. I understand that, but I mean to practice.
They're not bowling.
Don't worry, guys. I'll bring it right back.
You keep my left shoe.
I can't get it on layaway at the gun range?
No, if we go with rifles, like I got plenty of rifles. We'll be good.
That's what I'm saying. I got to be able to practice at least first before I invest in a gun.
We'll go.
But, yeah, I like bow hunting a lot. Bow hunting's fun. And see, bow hunting out here, I'll probably, like, if I go bow hunting next year, I probably won't kill anything because I've never hunted out here, and the terrain out here is completely different than back home. I've never hunted mule deer, and I've never hunted in, like, this type of mountainous desert. I don't know what to call the terrain out here. It ain't like Arkansas.
Well, don't worry. We got the lay of the land. We're fucking experts.
So, I do need to get my bow out here and get to practicing again, but that would be fun as shit.
That'd be so much
fuck
fun.
Fuck yeah.
Fuck yeah. And,
but even, like, the road gig and road gig and hunting trip sounds like a fucking great time.
Yeah, well, if we go to Arkansas, then like I've got everything we need there.
Yeah,
like all my rifles and stuff are there. So doing it out here would be logistically a little more difficult, and it'd be more difficult because, like I said, I've never hunted out here. But it would be fun. It'd be an adventure. At the very least, it'd be a fun camping trip.
Fuck yeah!
What is an Arkansas crowd like generally?
Like
would they get annoyed with Pat and I? How like we're very
no. So
I think they would like how much I say fag.
Some parts would. There's surprisingly, especially if you're going to like Fayetteville or Little Rock, which is where we'd be doing most of the shows, and I may be able to get us a show in El Dorado, but it's a mix of conservative and liberal, just like everywhere else, man. Mm-hmm. And it's funny thing, I've heard more racist shit in comedy out here than I have in the South. I came out here, I was like, I can't believe they're getting away with saying this shit. Because, you know, in the South, where slavery was a real thing, if you said half the shit, you're getting met in the parking lot. And it ain't going to be fun. And not just by black people, by white people, but everybody's going to beat your ass. Because, I mean, there's a lot of bad parts about being in the South. But there's a lot of good parts, too. And part of it's the camaraderie and the family. Like, if some out-of-towner comes in, shit
insults anyone in your town. Yeah.
Right. Like, you're about to have problems real quick. So... But y'all wouldn't have anything to worry about.
Yeah,
it's fine.
I mean, I don't talk about like race at all. I just do like just regular fucking jokes.
Yeah, y'all be good. The Arkansas crowds are fun. They're and the more you get towards Memphis, what I like about Memphis a lot is it's the most honest crowds I've ever been on. If you suck, they're gonna tell you suck immediately. But if you're good and they love you, they're gonna let you know that they love you. So it's like an all or nothing, where you're either bombing or killing. There is no in between.
You started doing comedy in the South and then came out here?
Yeah, I started in Arkansas. I was living in Russellville going to school, and then I would drive about an hour and 15 minutes every night to Little Rock to open mic and then drive back home.
Damn.
Okay. Did you go to, wait, what you said, what, where did you start it? In?
I was living in Russellville.
Russellville.
And I went to Little Rock for my first open mic.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And the cool thing about starting in Arkansas is Little Rock has such a small scene, you have to work the surrounding states. So you have to do Tulsa, you have to do Oklahoma City, you have to do Dallas, you have to do Memphis. So I know comics in Tulsa, Oklahoma City, that's Dallas, cool, Memphis. Cool, so when you start out there, like, you can get on the road way quicker. Mm-hmm. Where it's like, I've been out here for 2 years now, don't have any road. Well, I've had a couple road gigs south of here, but mm-hmm. not many.
I've yeah. heard south, there's good stuff.
Yeah.
San Diego, I heard, is a really cool town, and you can get some gigs there.
See, I'm trying to get connections up the West Coast. I just don't have them yet.
Yeah. It's not the same, like, density of comedians down there that it is out here, where yeah. in one city there's fucking 10,000 of us.
In Arkansas, there may be 25 open micers.
Really?
10 of them that are taking it. I'm talking about in Little Rock specifically.
No, I know, yeah.
Yeah, so Fayetteville has their own scene, which is northwest Arkansas, and I think they have 10 comics total, Jesus. Maybe. So the whole state may have 35 comics. And half of them are kind of taking it seriously, not really. So, yeah. I mean, and then out of those, maybe five of them are, like, legit trying to work at it. So, but it's fun. I loved Arkansas. The crowds are great. And because of that, if you have any jokes at all, you rise to the cream of the crop immediately.
Yeah.
And then,
if you're really trying.
Yeah. Like, all you have to do is work a little bit, write a little bit, go to open mics a little bit, and you're going to do fine out there.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're kind of playing in the major leagues out in Los Angeles, because on any given night, you can walk to the Comedy Store
mm-hmm.
and just look at that fucking lineup. And that's what you're competing with.
Yeah.
You're competing. When people come to your show, they could have very well easily gone to the Comedy Store.
For the same price.
For the same price. And you better be on your fucking game.
Dude, so I was doing my home club in Little Rock this last right after Christmas. And my mom, is the first time she ever saw me do stand-up. She came to the club on Friday night to watch my show. I was hosting, so, like, I was only doing 15 minutes at the top. But she was like, am I going to make you nervous by coming out and watching your show? I was like, Mom, like, I'm not trying to be offensive, but, like, I've gone up and bombed in the OR. There's nothing out here that's going to scare me.
Yeah,
like,
right?
You can't – it's just not on the same level. And so you have this confidence when you – 'cause especially starting there, coming out here, and then going back to do shows. Like, you have a Superman feeling, like an invincibility to you. Like, you're – because even if you bomb out there, it's like, there's nobody here.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. No one's going to find out.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, these are all fans. And exactly. So you can just get to let loose, cut loose, have a good time, do your jokes, crowd work a little bit, like, whatever you want to do. It's fun.
I'm sure it's almost like boxing or getting, like, kicked in the leg if you're an MMA guy.
Yeah.
For a comic bombing, you just get conditioned.
Like, yeah.
Like, you just get conditioned to bombing, and it still sucks. But, like, taking a leg kick, I'm sure, as, like, a fighter, it still sucks, but you've done it so many times that, like, you're just conditioned to accepting it.
The nerves are dead, yeah. Yeah. Like, I don't have feelings. You can't hurt my feelings with yeah. as a crowd anymore.
And
sorry.
Also, like, if I bomb out here, there's always, no matter, you know, obviously at most open mics, probably not, but if you might bomb in front of someone who, like, is, it kind of matters.
Yeah.
Could get you a show.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, I'm not going to go back to New Jersey and go to Scotty's on Wednesday night and accidentally bomb in front of Joe Rogan.
Right. Yeah. Or the booker of some club.
Exactly.
Like,
yeah.
We're not going to do a show in Little Rock and then bomb, and then we get back to L.A. and then go to the fourth wall and be like, dude, I heard you bombed in Little Rock. Like, no one's going to fucking know.
Dude, yeah, everybody at fourth wall be jealous. Like, damn, yeah. I wish I could go to Little Rock to bomb.
I know, right?
The booker from the Comedy Store was in Little Rock, saw you bombed and you never get to
randomly, Lorne Michaels was in a comedy club in fucking Little Rock.
Dude, why would they go to Little Rock to go to a comedy club? Yeah. I got, oh, well. But, yeah, man, I've still got friends back there that call me and stuff, and they're comics, and they're great. And it's really cool hearing, because when I came out here with five other comics from Little Rock, and so, like, the scene kind of suffered. Because, like I said, there's not very many out there.
Percentage.
And then if you take, like, the top six people that are actually trying, and then they move to a different city, there's a big hole to fill. So a lot of up-and-comers, there's a lot of shows that all of a sudden don't have people on it anymore. And so they get to rise to the occasion. And so it's really cool to have friends of mine that started after me and get to see how, like, when I was in town, I was kind of the big fish in the little pond or whatever. Then you move away. Then you see your friends get to come up and be the big fish. And I think that's really cool.
Are all five guys you moved out here with still here?
Nope. One guy left. I think he made it – we talk about the Arkansas House, it's all comics that I live with, and we talk about it like it's a TV show, and we say that he was a character that showed up for the pilot and then never made it back. Yeah. So I think he was here for maybe 6 weeks, out of that 6 weeks, he went on a two-week vacation with his girlfriend. He flew his girlfriend out from Arkansas to go on a vacation with him, and then he was like, I'm going to go back to Arkansas and be with her. And we were like, all right, dude, whatever.
Now let's play those numbers we just played with the comedy scene. There's like, you know, 10, da-da-da.
Yeah.
What do you like? How many open micers are there in Los Angeles? And then how many do you think are doing it full? You know, like really going head first with it.
I think a number I saw on the internet said there was like 10,000 comics in LA.
Oh my God!
I can believe that.
But I think that's 10,000 people that have tried an open mic within the past year. Yeah. Okay. And there's a difference between somebody that goes up once a month and somebody that's going up 2-3 times a night.
Yeah.
Or somebody that is like actually getting road work and working on an act and trying to get better versus a hobbyist who, you know, trying to socialize and make new friends. Yeah. Which I personally don't think there's anything wrong with the hobbyist. Like, I'm not mad at a hobbyist or nothing. Mm-hmm. But I know
sometimes I am.
So yeah, and I understand the frustrations because sometimes it's like, man, he's in a spot that I could be in and he don't even fucking give a fuck.
Yeah.
But where I stand is that there's no way a hobbyist is gonna put into this what I'm putting into it. Mm-hmm. And so over time, like, if I can't outwork the hobbyist, I shouldn't be doing it anyway.
That's true. Yeah, I still bet there's at least 1,000 comics out here doing it seriously.
Oh yeah, for 1,000. I would say if there's if that number is true, if there's 10,000 open micers, then I would say probably 40% of them think they're serious, and 10% of that really are.
Yeah.
So probably what? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm terrible at math.
40% of 1,000 is 400. 10, and we're doing 10% of the 10,000.
Fuck it. Let's just say 2,000. Yeah. Fuck those percentages.
At
if
least
you're
2,000.
Yeah, at least 2,000.
I mean, did I say 400? I don't know.
I think that was my math and it was 4, just 000. Wrong. Yeah, I narrowed it down too much. My bad.
For me, I think the winning. I mean, look, thinking about those numbers is very discouraging. But I think what you got to do is just keep doing it.
Yeah.
You look at everyone that I look up to. Bill Burr, Louis C.K., Sebastian Maniscalco, Dave Chappelle, all these guys. I mean, Dave Chappelle is a little bit of an outlier because he had success very young. I think he was like 18 and had like a HBO half hour. But you look at the other guys, Bill Burr, Louis C.K., Sebastian Maniscalco. I mean, these are guys that were quote-unquote like overnight successes.
Mm-hmm.
Bill Burr, I think, started doing it when he was 22 or 23. He moved to New York City. And
he didn't hit until he was almost 40.
He didn't get his first special until he was 40. Granted, specials were more special back then.
Right.
But still, I mean, look at Sebastian Maniscalco.
Look at Ron White. Do you know Ron White's story?
No.
And I heard this from another comic, so take it with a grain of salt.
So
this
it's obviously 100% true.
Right. This is written in stone. This is in the Bible. This is how true this is. But Ron White apparently slept with a club waitress once and made fun of her after, and then she ended up becoming the manager of several clubs, and he was like 10 years in, 17 years in, something like that, and has like moved down to South Texas and had almost stopped because he couldn't get work anywhere.
Because he
got blackballed because he was being an asshole to whoever this booker was. And then Jeff Foxworthy, you know, was a buddy of his back in the day.
That's right.
Brought him on a Blue Collar Comedy Tour, and then he blew up again. And
he was the best one on that by far.
He's amazing. Ron White's one of my favorite comedians of all time. He's hilarious. Yeah. That new special he's got, If You Shut Up, I'll Quit Listening, or If You Quit, whatever one on Netflix. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it's called. Yeah, yeah. But he's got that joke where he's like, either she's bad at sex or she's crazy, and like he's talking about her blowing him, and he's like, "That bitch is insane." Like, it's so funny.
I have a great one, Ron White story. So our buddy Augustino, it isn't a paid regular, but he's just below that. Like, he's very soon.
He's friends and family.
Friends
and family. Yeah. So we went to the store on Pollock night. We're just kind of shooting the shit, chilling, and not Pollock. It was just a random night, and he goes, "Hey, you want to hang out where the paid regulars hang out?" I'm like, absolutely.
Absolutely, yeah.
So we go back there, and no one's there. It's just a bunch of people who kind of like know people. We're just chilling, sitting. It's just cool to be back there knowing who goes back there.
Yeah.
And we're just chilling. This one guy lights up a joint, and he starts passing around. I'm like, well, you know, whatever. Fucking, this is, you know, I'll take a hit. And then all of a sudden we hear, "You guys doing drugs back here?"
Hell yeah.
And I look over and it's Ron White looking fresh as fuck in a nice like gray suit.
Yeah.
And he's like, "Pass that fucking joint." And I just start fucking sharing a joint with Ron White. It was fucking awesome. I even like talked to him.
That's
I was
badass.
Like, I forget what I said. I was just, honestly, I was high and I was in awe.
Yeah.
And I just, he's like very intimidating to me. And I think he's a very funny guy.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just he has so like a insanely yeah. fucking. Oh, dude. I mean, cliche as it is, like, he definitely has a presence. Like, the whole fucking patio was just vibrant once he walked in.
Mm-hmm.
It was fucking insane. It was so cool.
Dude, I bet that's a cool experience. I'm jealous of that experience. Yeah. That's awesome.
And he's one of those guys that has the ability to, like, say something really hilarious with very few words.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
Well, there's I heard this somewhere. It's, like, so... It's kind of silly, but it says, like, the difference between a comic and a comedian, and I forget which one is which, is one says funny things... And then one says things funny. And I think, like, I think Ron White is one of those guys that he's just both. He yeah. says funny things, and also he just, he like, that accent in his voice, it just, he says things funny.
Yeah.
You know? Same with, like, Sebastian Maniscalco, I think. You know? It's just, they have the ability to write material that's very funny, and just the way they present it. I mean, if you looked at a, I keep saying Sebastian, he's my favorite comedian. If you looked at Sebastian Maniscalco's set, mm-hmm. right, his set, on a piece of paper, you'd be like, ah, it's, you know, it's a...
Yeah, you wouldn't laugh out loud reading it, but then when he delivers it, it takes it to an immediate another level.
Yeah, I mean, and then you, like, Ron White, that joke you just said, like, you know, they're either crazy or they're bad in bed. Mm-hmm. He's getting a blowjob, this chick's insane. Mm-hmm. I'd read that and be like, oh, that's pretty funny.
Yeah.
But then you watch him do it, you're like, that's fucking hilarious.
Yeah, and that's something that, like, a lesson that teaches me on the stage that I'm at is that you've got to write your jokes to where... You could write it on a piece of paper and give it to someone else, and they could go say it, and they might get a laugh with it, but they can't do it like you. Yes. They can't get that same pop that because it's your joke. And I actually had a guy in Oklahoma steal my joke one time at a show I was at, so oh my God. That was ridiculous.
Did you beat his ass?
So
yeah, let's hear the story.
Okay, so I was at this casino in Oklahoma doing a show, and they have this small comedy club upstairs, and when I first started, the first joke I ever wrote was about Eminem. And I was like, he's 40 years old. Do you think he has the same type of problems other 40-year-old men have? You know, implying ED. And then the whole punchline is me, like, doing, if you had one shot or one up to your dick. Like, he was, like, rapping to his dick to get himself hyped. Mm. Like, he got to 8 mile that dick. I think that was one of the punchlines I used. But I was in the show, and this guy had been at a show in Tulsa and heard me do it before and then was on the show in Miami and didn't know I was in the green room. And so he's on stage. He gets up there and opens with his joke, with the Eminem joke. And so I hear it, and I'm like, what? And I run out of the green room, and I see him doing it. And I'm like, bitch, you were at the fucking, like, and I recognized him, immediately knew where he stole the joke. And I just start heckling him. I'm like, oh, yeah, where'd you write that? Or where'd you come up with that? And then, like, as I'm doing it, you know, I'm getting madder and madder and walking towards the stage. And at first I was like, I'm not going to, like, I'm trying to be professional. And I was less than a year in, I think. So, you know, very rookie. But yeah. I'm getting real emotional, real pissed off. And the booker comes up and grabs me and is like, hey, well, it's like, I'm never booking him again. Like, don't worry. And I'm pretty sure that guy quit. So,
good. Fuck him.
Yeah.
What a sack fuck of that shit. Loser.
Did he say anything to you after he got off stage?
No. He actually left. Instead of getting off stage and coming back to the green room where all the other comics, he got off stage on the opposite side, walked to the staircase, and we never saw him again.
Good.
Yeah.
That is how it should be.
Yeah. He was
that guy.
He was scared. And then I ended up. Yeah. I don't think I ever saw him again. We might have exchanged Facebook messages. I think I messaged him. I was like, hey, man, I didn't appreciate that. And he's like, I'm sorry, I didn't. And he apologized. I was like, whatever. But, yeah, I don't think I ever saw
him. There's
again.
A premise that I think has kind of been done. Dude, I'll do a deep dive on YouTube for like 15 minutes just to make sure I didn't get anything.
Because well, I've had premises and stuff that were very similar because I used to have a joke about like – if guys could work out and make their dick bigger, there'd be a line out of every gym in the country. And I did a bunch. And then I realized that it was – have you ever heard Rogan's flying squirrel pussy people talking about big dick pills and stuff?
Exactly, yeah.
It was very similar. I was like, okay, obviously that's too close. And so I just stopped doing it. And I think that's like if you're a real comic, if you start doing something – and it may be original and true to you, but then as soon as you see that somebody else had the same idea, you're like, all right, that's either too close or –
no longer feels – the same.
Yeah, and it does. It doesn't feel like, ooh, I came up with this. It feels like, ah. It almost feels like one of those internet memes, because you know how sometimes you have an idea and you'll do it on stage and then it'll become a meme later. You're like, fuck, I should have just made a meme.
Yeah,
like, right. I shouldn't have even done it on stage.
There was one of those jokes where I had to stop doing because even though I said it first, the person obviously is more famous than me, so it would look like I would be copying them. I had a joke where there's two kinds of like different vaginas. Like, one looks like it's just been through a fucking mess.
Yeah.
And the other one is like a, just like barely a slit. It kind of looks like a dolphin smiling. And then I watched or no, maybe I said it was an old lady smiling with no an old lady with no teeth smiling. I like those kind of pussies.
Yeah.
and then I watched Dane Cook's Troublemaker, who, you know, you could argue is more famous than me.
Yeah.
And his joke was the same kind of thing. Was he did the dolphin. Like, yeah, I like the pussies where like it looks like a dolphin smiling. And I go, I did that joke like 4 weeks ago before I saw your special, but you clearly have it now. You know?
And honestly, I think dolphin's better than old lady. It's less words. It's a clearer picture.
It's more absurd.
It is. Like,
yeah. He did a better job.
Sometimes it sucks when that happens, but that also that inspires you, because like if Dane Cook came up
a better comedian than you, I can't believe it.
Well, actually, think about it like this though: you came up with the joke that Dane Cook came up with and put in his special.
True.
Use that as fire. Be like, okay, you know what? I'm gonna have to let this joke go, but you don't need the joke. You need the comic that wrote that joke, because you can write more jokes.
Yeah.
So anytime somebody like tries to steal a joke or tries to, what it's like, you know what? Fine. Fucking have it, dude, because that's fine. I got the brain that wrote it.
Yeah.
Like, I got the brain that came up with it. So take my whole act. I don't care. I will come up with more shit. Mm-hmm. And that's something that they can't steal. They can't steal like your presence, your brain that and the life that you've lived that's given you the experiences to talk about it. So fuck it.
Yeah.
Like,
Not there's anything wrong with comics hiring writers to write for them.
Yeah.
I couldn't perform other people's jokes.
Well,
I mean, I think there's something wrong with it. It means you're not a fucking real comic.
Well, hold on. What do you think about Chris Rock? Now, let me tell you how Chris Rock did it. Chris Rock had his buddies that went to open mics with, like, after he had been doing it for dozens of years. And he'd have his buddies that knew him and knew his voice. Chris would write the bits and would, like, go up on stage with the material. He'd have other people. Like, say if HBO was paying him $100,000, he'd be like, look, I'm going to give $20,000, boom, of it is yours. You come with me to every show. Mm. And his friends that are comics were sitting in the back, like, oh, what about this tag? Or what about this? Or I saw you do this, let me do that. And then sometimes they would go up at a club, and all three of them would perform it, and each perform it a different way, and then go back and take notes. But, okay, but they're all writing it.
Must have been a horrible show to be at.
Oh, I bet that would have been lit. I bet that would have been funny.
Just
shit.
Just three guys doing all the same material.
Well, the point is that, like, he got his friends, and yes, he paid writers, but it was...
That's different, because he's still coming up with the bits.
Right.
Still writing the jokes. But if you're just, like, a performer that you have people come up with everything for you...
Yeah, that's why I don't like Gabriel Iglesias.
He does that. I didn't know that.
Really? Allegedly.
Well, I mean, Alan Peterson, actually, shout out to Alan, he tagged one of my jokes. And I was like, hey, dude, that's really funny. You mind if I use that? He's like, I had a joke about how black people love using speakerphone in public.
Yeah.
And then he made the points like, oh, yeah, I think it was like Nextel fucked us up. And I'm like, dude, can I use that? That's really funny. He's like, oh, yeah, it's your fucking joke.
Yeah.
But like something like that, it's totally different.
Yeah, yeah. And if you have comics that are buddies and y'all going to mics together and going to shows together all the time, you're gonna come up with tags for each other, and it becomes a collaborative thing. But it's still yours, because that was still your idea, and you still presented it, and then your buddies just gave you a different twist. Because there's been several times where I'm at a show and I'll hear a comic set up something, and I'm like, oh, here's the I come up with a punch. I'm like, this is hilarious. They'll say something else that's funny, and I'm like, oh shit, they didn't even think about that. So I'll go up and tell them, hey, did you think about this? And sometimes it's a tag, and sometimes it's just a completely different punchline.
Yeah.
And like,
well, me and Pat do it for each other literally after every mic.
Right.
Either the walk back to the car or the drive home, we always go through each other's sets and goes, don't do this, don't do this. This was good. Mm-hmm. And then what if you did this instead of that? I'm like, oh yeah.
And you see, that's really helpful as a comic.
Oh yeah.
And I think so, the comics that do that, and especially if HBO is about to pay you $100,000 and you throw your friends 20.
Yeah.
And just a guarantee.
It's a win-win.
Yeah. Like, so say y'all came up together and have been doing stand-up together for however long, 20 years, let's say. You get an idea for a special, or you get the chance at a special. You're like, I want this to be the best special it can be. I want to pay you. I want to pay whoever else my buddy is. Every night we're going out. We're going to work these jokes to get ready for the special. I mean, fuck yeah, you're going to do that.
Yeah, for sure.
Then you throw them some money up top. And I believe it was, I originally heard all this from Joey Diaz's podcast, I believe. But, I mean, that sounds like a great method to me. That's what I would like. If HBO came to me, I'd be like, I'm getting my three best friends that have been with me from the beginning and that know my voice and that I know they're funny. And I'm going to have them help me.
Yeah, I can respect that for sure.
Yeah, that's totally different than just a stranger just, hey, how about this joke?
Yeah.
You know? Because the way that Chris Rock is doing it, if this is accurate, is, I mean, his friends are basically helping tag and structure his already existing ideas.
Yeah.
And again, like you said, they're his really good friends, so they already know his voice.
Mm-hmm.
And again, back to what you said, is you said, I can write down a joke on a piece of paper and someone can laugh, but it's not as good as me actually saying it.
Yeah.
And that's the whole thing. Anyone can say a joke. Your grandfather can say a fucking joke.
We've all heard street jokes, and they're all funny.
Yeah, they're all great, but there's something unique about a person doing a joke, like a funny person doing their joke in their voice.
Yeah, and because when you do it right, it's so authentic, and especially when the audience hasn't heard it before, it gives them that spark, that real guttural feeling that a joke makes you feel that's actually funny.
Yeah. Laughing is involuntary.
And that's why, like, when you're at a place and you're at a show or something and you're calling out stuff in the room to where, like, whether you're, like, somebody trips and falls and you're making fun of them or you're doing a crowd work thing or something that's happening right there, everybody, it's understood that this isn't part of the act. Mm-hmm. This is how funny this guy is, and it's happening right now. He's calling it right now. He's here with us right now, and it adds another level to that feeling. I know when I saw Burr for the first time live, when I left his show, I was physically tired from laughing so hard. That's never happened to me before. I'm like, I've been to some really funny comics and it's comics that I absolutely love, but like I've left physically tired. I was like, shit, I need to go take a nap because I had laughed for like an hour and 15 minutes straight.
There's only a couple comics in the last year and a half that have put out specials that I've watched and laughed out loud.
Yeah.
His new Paper Tiger was so amazing. It was so like I think it's from Paper Tiger, the joke where he's like, I'm trying to work on my anger, and I even got like a smiley face sticker I put on the dashboard, that way when I get like oh, you motherfucker, I look at the smiley face and I go, oh yeah, yeah, you know, I've done that too, you know? It's just like, it's so fucking perfect.
Yeah,
you know,
did you see Secret Time, Burt Kreischer's Secret Time?
Not yet, actually.
I thought that was excellent. I thought he did such an amazing job.
Secret Time is one of my favorite specials of all time. And, like, I was a big fan of Burt from The Machine, obviously.
Yeah.
And, like, but watching Secret Time, that is a well-written special.
Oh, no, I didn't see that one. Yeah, that one's
really good. Oh, my. When he's talking about the whale, he's like, I was as high as a whale. And you're like, what? And you just imagine a whale at the top of the ocean looking down. Oh, it's so funny. And it's like talking about getting his wife, like, pajama pants.
Yeah.
And so by the end of it, his family's like, come on, pajamas. Oh my God.
Yeah, here's how stupid I am.
And the funny thing is, you know, the Machine special that got him the video went viral.
Mm-hmm.
You know, amazing story. I thought the special was okay. And then when his Secret Time came out.
Oh, I thought Secret Time was way better than the special with The Machine.
It was fucking awesome.
Yeah.
And that, like, how he tied things together with, like, Isla, his daughter, and, like, the time traveling and the toothpaste.
Yes.
Oh, maybe time traveling smells like shit. You know, then you put like deodorant under your nose. It was just so fucking funny, dude.
Yeah, Secret Time. That was one that when it first came out and I saw it, all my friends would be like, "Hey, don't go watch it. Wait till you're having a bad day, like shit day at work. Your girlfriend broke up with you. Your mom just dead. Like some terrible shit's going down, and then go watch it because it's so funny and it hits you. Like even if you're in a bad mood, I've watched it maybe three or four times.
I've watched it like a dozen.
And
the pajama pants one fucking kills me.
Yeah, that's
because it's so him too.
It is, and that's what I love about comedy, especially when a stand-up does it right and it's so authentically them. It's just like it can't help but translate.
My favorite joke in that special is he talks about the first time he ever got spanked. And he's at his sister's birthday party, and she goes to blow the candles, and he goes, like, everyone's like, one, two, three, and he goes, and kiss the cake. And then he goes, and my dad goes, I need to talk to you in the garage. And he goes, okay. And his dad was about to spank him, and he goes, pull down your pants. And he goes, all right, it was a good joke, but I wouldn't go suck my dick over it. And then he spanked me, and his dad goes, all right, let's go back to the party. And he goes, I don't feel like having fun right now. But, like, the whole point, like, it was a good joke, but I wouldn't go sucking my dick over it. Like, I literally had to rewind it and watch it, like, four times.
Yeah.
Such a good joke.
It's a great joke. It's fucking hilarious. Bert's funny.
And also, the funny thing about that special, which I love, I watched it, loved it. Then I saw him on a podcast talk about it, and then watched it again and loved it more because he talks about how, so he filmed two shows, and the first one, like, so he, like me, has a problem like announcing words or enunciating words and being yeah. like, very clear.
Can't even say enunciate.
Yeah, no.
He has a problem enunciating words.
And he goes, the first show, I did it. And then afterwards, my wife, my manager, my agent came up to me and they gave me literally a fucking Rolodex of words that I didn't say clearly. So he goes, the second show, I needed to, because he was only shooting two shows.
Right.
He's like, I need to do, like, we can't use anything from the first show, basically. So this one show has to be perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, I just crushed it. And it was. He fucking did a great job.
Dude, that's awesome. Like, I can't imagine, because I've never filmed something for stand-up other than, like, taping your set. You know how hard it is to get a good tape?
Ugh. I don't even have any. That's how hard it is.
I have one and it's dog shit.
Yeah. That's the thing is, I always have a dog shit tape, and then about every 6 months, I'll have a slightly less dog shitty tape.
Yeah.
And so every time I'm submitting, I'm like, every couple months, you get one that's just slightly better.
Yeah.
Because there's always either the sound's off, the light's off, somebody's talking, there's somebody walks in front of it, or you slip on a, you're killing, but you mispronounce something, and then,
yeah.
Or it's like in that situation where the crowd can understand you, but for some reason the mic couldn't.
Yeah.
And so it sounds like you're mumbled, but everybody was laughing on board, so tapes are weird.
Yeah. But, dude, we're at an hour, and this has been a fucking blast. Yeah. Dude, great episode. This was so much fun.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, guys.
My buddy, Coach, who's listening right now, I would introduce you to him, okay. But I think I would lose my best friend because you guys would fucking just be just two peas in a pod. He's a country boy.
Fuck yeah.
But, dude, anything to plug, promote, do social media?
My social media is at Bear the Comic, BairtheComic. And the biggest thing that I'm promoting right now, I'm doing a podcast with my roommates called the XFLOL podcast,
okay.
Where we are following the XFL league and covering all the games and trying to make it funny along the way. Cause there's a lot of like funny stuff with the way they're reporting it and things like that. And we go to all the LA Wildcats home games. So if you're in Los Angeles and you come to a home game, come find us. I'm the guy with the big mullet. I'm usually in a lion onesie. We have XFLOL t-shirts on. You can find us. We'll be tailgating. Come drink beer with us. Come have fun and claws up. Go Wildcats.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah. Pat, what do you got, kid?
I got nothing coming up, really.
Yeah, same. All right. Well, you know, you're the social media by now. Thanks so much for listening. We appreciate it. Pat, what do you got? Nice closing message. Did you vote today?
I can rate and subscribe. There you apparently go. It helps. We love you.
Yeah.
All 40 of you.
55, maybe.
Maybe. On a good 55. Day.
Yeah, I don't know. It's
fuck yeah. We're going to bump those numbers up.
Yeah, that's right, fuck baby. Yeah. Getting all that right. Bear bump. Give us the bear bump.
All right. Bump. All right. Thanks, guys. Bye.